Welcome back to the podcast. I want to thank you for choosing to listen to Daughters Without Moms. I am blessed by the positive affirmation I hear from listeners, and I appreciate you spending your time listening to the stories shared on the podcast. If you want to help others find the podcast, please share an episode on your social media account. That helps others find the podcast as well. Thank you. Melissa's mom died at the end of 2019 after a long journey with breast cancer. Melissa's parents divorced when she was young, and it was just Melissa and her mom growing up together. Without further ado, Melissa's story. Hi, this is Beth, and welcome back to the Daughters Without Moms podcast. Today I have with me Melissa. Melissa is in Florida, where it's, well, she said not so much sunny anymore, but it was sunny today, but beautiful, warm Florida, because I'm still in Pennsylvania where it's not so warm. But they say, you know, March comes in like a lion and goes out like a lamb. So I'm holding on to that hope. So Melissa, I'm going to turn the microphone over to you and let you tell us your story. And then I'll be back with a question or two at the end. So thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Beth. And just wanted to also thank you so much for providing this opportunity for me to share my story. And as I mentioned to you before, just really sincerely thank you for just in general creating this platform for all of us daughters and anyone without a mom who has been through that experience to kind of share organically what happened and speak from the heart. So thanks for having me. And I'm looking forward to sharing my story with you and all of the listeners. And I'm hoping that some of the things I say resonate and can help someone feel validated in their own grief experience. I guess just to give some background, this year will be coming up on 5 years since I lost my mom. I lost her in December of 2019, so before the chaos of COVID-19 pandemic erupted. So I'll touch upon the timing of that as well and how it kind of tied into my grieving experience. But it was December, so early December before the holiday season in 2019. My mother had struggled with metastatic breast cancer for some years. She was originally diagnosed with breast cancer at a pretty young age, I would say. She was 46 at the time, and I was in middle school. And the memories of her kind of going in for something suspicious, which turned out to be malignant, which resulted in a mastectomy and subsequent rounds of chemo and radiation, that all I think is pretty suppressed, I would say, because I was very young and not really sure how to process all of that at the time. But it set a precedent for my constant worry. And I think in a way, waiting for the other shoe to drop and just always kind of having in the back of my mind that my mom may not be okay one day, right? Like these things can happen to us. We hear about them and see it on the news or have friends or family. Or if you work, you know, at a hospital or in oncology. So I grew up with my mom. It was always just kind of her and I as a team. Some background on that too. My parents divorced when I was really young. I'm an only child. I was born in the US. My dad is American, but my mom was from Greece. So she moved here to go to college, met my dad, and then had me. And when I was really young, they decided to separate and go their own ways. And so that meant my mom and I moved back to Greece and I grew up there. So I was fortunate enough to kind of split my time. My parents had a very healthy relationship for being divorced, which was a big blessing for me. I know not everyone gets to experience that kind of, you know, peaceful separation that they had. And they remained friends, and I was able to see my dad over summers and over the holidays. But for the most part, it was me and my mom, and she never remarried. I was the only child, so it was just her and me navigating life and doing it all together. Back home in Greece, we also lived really close to my mom's mother, my grandma. So I was very close with her, and she helped me a lot in kind of my upbringing and the day-to-day when my mom was at work. But I think given the fact of my mom being diagnosed with breast cancer at such an early age, she also had a couple of other health conditions. I was always just very sensitive to the fact that there's health issues with her. And I think something that I've talked about too with my friends and through therapy, and for any listeners, I know some have mentioned this as well, like, you know, Disney movies, like they're, you know, always showing how we lose our parents and the effect that has on us. I mean, I remember watching, I think it was The Land Before Time way back in the day, and going to my mom at probably like the age of 5 and saying, oh my gosh, I don't know what I'm going to do when I lose you. And it was just always so ingrained that, you know, from a very early age, the like life's fragility and how it's short and how I may or I will lose my mom. And what am I going to do when that happens? And I think it was just all of the above, right? Like the fact that we kind of grew up watching these movies, reading these stories about orphans and losing our parents and dealing with so much what I would say now, you know, traumatic events, and pairing that with my mom's illnesses that she's had to battle, including the breast cancer that she had to deal with at a pretty young age, I was just always so aware that I will one day lose my mom. And I distinctly remember there were times where I'd just be sitting with her on the couch. We'd be watching a movie or just kind of having a moment together. And I remember even as a child, just looking at her and thinking and taking it all in, and just telling myself that I really need to cherish as much as I can, because I was always just worried. So all that being said, I had a very close relationship with my mom, being that it was mostly the two of us. And obviously, you know, as a child and as a teenager, you go through your ups and downs and your occasional fights. And but always to say that she was my rock and my compass. And we just had an amazing relationship. And as I grew older, that evolved as well. And we learned to also be each other's friends. And that was beautiful in and of itself. And I realize also that I'm coming from a place of privilege. Like I said earlier on, I lost my mom in 2019 at the very end of it. So I was about to be 28 years old. So I was able to experience almost 30 years of a wonderful, loving relationship with my mom. So I do realize that not everyone has that for one reason or another. So part of my grieving journey, if you will, has been also realizing how lucky I was, because one thing that my mom said, and this resonates so much, and it's just one of those words or sentences that she said that I just take with me and I write it down and I share it with as many people as I can, that because our favorite movie was The Lion King, and they always talk about the circle of life, right? And explaining that, you know, someday we all die, but it's, you know, how we live our life and the legacy we leave behind and how we care for our loved ones and all that. And she said, it doesn't matter how big the circle of your life is, as long as that circle is full and full of life and love and experiences. And she actually told me that the day that we found out that there's nothing more that they could do. So for her illness at the time. And that's been just a very helpful thing to remember. That's been something that I always just try to keep in the back of my mind when days get hard, you know, or I have a quote unquote griefy day where I may feel sad and miss my mom, whether that's triggered by, you know, an anniversary of her passing, her birthday, Mother's Day, or just randomly. As we all know, we can, you know, just listen to a random song that comes on, or I think resonated with someone on the show previously saying that they heard someone's backup camera and it reminded them of the monitors and, you know, the hospital. And I'm like, yes, I've totally been there. And so all that to say that I realized that in everything, I've been very lucky to have the relationship I did with my mom for almost 30 years. But just a little bit more, I guess, on everything leading up to her passing as well. Going back to when she was first diagnosed with breast cancer, I was in middle school. She had the mastectomy at the time, went through a few rounds of chemo, and through it all, like, she had her brave face on the whole time. Like, her priority besides making it through was to make sure I wasn't impacted by this. So she arranged for me to stay with my friends, make sure my grandma was always available to help with school, you know, making sure I had as much stability as I could. And that's really commendable. Like, you know, in hindsight, I realized how brave and how an amazing mom she was for just always making sure I was a priority, even in her hardest moments. So that was back in 2006. So when I was about to graduate from high school a few years later, I decided that I didn't want to stay in Greece anymore. We had talked about this, and we thought it'd be best for me to come to the US to pursue my college education. There's just a lot more opportunity here. And it was always kind of the end goal for us. My mom and I jokingly would say that sometimes in Greece, we felt like the flies in the milk bowl because she had experience living here. You know, we both understood kind of the duality of having lived in two different places and integrating kind of, you know, the cultures from living in Greece and living in the US. So we always also had that bonding over that, which not a lot of people can resonate with. And she had even mentioned that in the future, she would even consider moving to the US, and it was just a very big change. So long story short, I graduated high school. I moved to Florida in Tampa, where I'm currently at. So I've stayed here ever since. And my dad lived not too far away. So I was able to kind of develop and you know, a closer relationship with my dad too, which was nice. But what that meant was the worry that I always had about my mom was now tenfold, being away from her and being limited to only being able to see her really twice a year for the most part. When I would go back to Greece would be during summer break and between classes for a few months, and then for a few weeks up to a month at most over the holiday season. And in a way, it made both my mom and I very present because we knew we only had so much time, and we made the most out of it. We would always make sure we went on little vacations together, choose a new beach to go to or an island to go to. And we kind of established these routines together, made our own little destinations our own. So there was always some places that we would go to over and over again and have amazing, like, kind of mother-daughter bonding time and talk about everything and anything. I was very lucky to be able to, like I said earlier, have a friendship with my mom, which I also recognize not a lot of daughters have. Every relationship is very different, right? There's nuances there. But for me, it really just further kind of established the fact that my mom was my rock, because she was always the first person I would go to. We have our people that when something happens, a promotion, a heartbreak, anything, we, if we're lucky, have more than one person that we reach out to. But for me, it was always my mom. I always had amazing friends and my dad, but my mom was on speed dial. My mom was the first person, no matter what time it was, even with the time difference, if she was in Greece and I was in the US, she would always be there. And we got to enjoy a lot of that together over the years. And then fast forward to now 2015. So I've been in the US for a while. We've kind of established this relationship of being apart for most of the year. We would have regular calls. I'd pretty much be on the phone with her every other day talking about just daily stuff. So even though we weren't physically together, we were always together in heart. And we always said that, you know, even though we may not physically be there, we just are able to be so present with each other. And I think that was also another component that I kind of kept with me throughout my grieving journey, because I would tell myself, like, my mom isn't physically here, but I feel her essence and her presence in other ways. So in 2015, unfortunately, there were some tests that showed that, you know, there were signs that the cancer had come back. And it showed up in her bones. And I won't go into a lot of details on kind of the nature of metastatic breast cancer and all of that. I also should say I work in cancer research. So I ended up, I think, just subconsciously wanting to delve into the area that I was always so worried about my mom, and wanting to help others. So I knew kind of what that meant. And even though she wouldn't say it and I wouldn't say it, our family wouldn't say it, we knew kind of, you know, there was a time limit, right? Like the hourglass, like the visual I had at the time, was the hourglass that officially kind of turned, right? So it's officially like, I don't know how much time I have with my mom. And ironically, the day that we kind of verified that the cancer had come back and was in her bones now was the day before we were planning to go on a little vacation together, specifically in Greece and Santorini, which any listeners have ever been to Greece, or if it's on your bucket list, we all know Santorini is kind of the place to go. It's a very magical place. But we put our brave faces on and we made the best out of a vacation and really just took it all in. At the time, my poor mom, because the cancer was now spread to her bones, there was a lot of pain associated with that. So she was using a cane, she was slower, but she just powered through, minimal complaints, and just we both just took it all in. Like, I remember specifically at night we were sitting outside and just looking on the caldera, which is just breathtaking, where you can kind of see the cliffs and the ocean below and kind of the glimmer of the moonlight. And she said, it doesn't really get any better than this. And we both kind of just looked at each other and we said, well, how lucky, you know, even though we knew that there was a lot going on that she'd have to face and deal with. You know, we realized that we were also very lucky, and she knew that I'd, you know, support her in any way that I could. So she started some treatments that weren't too what I would call aggressive. So it wasn't specifically like chemotherapy or anything that would really kind of affect her quality of life right away, But nonetheless, she had to, you know, regularly go to the oncologist and receive like hormonal therapy and some radiation and things of that nature. And 2 years later, unfortunately, we realized it had then metastasized to the liver. So that's when things kind of really took a turn for the worse, I would say. And like I mentioned earlier, right, it was almost like an internal clock shift that we knew there was so much of a time limit, but that was what really threw me into a whirlwind of emotions, because I thought, well, maybe, you know, with the metastasis in the bone, it's a manageable chronic condition that she can work through as long as it doesn't progress further. And then just seeing that there was no, you know, that wasn't an option was just really, really soul crushing. I found out before I was planning to visit her that summer. And also, that was the first summer that my boyfriend at the time and now husband was planning to visit Greece. So it was a lot going on. And the first summer, my now husband traveled with me to Greece and was able to kind of see where I grew up and really spend time with my mom. They had met before, but it was also, you know, the first experience I had with the duality or how things can coexist, where you have something, you know, that brings out happiness, like sharing experiences with a loved one at the time, my boyfriend, and showing him everything and anything about the Greek culture, meeting all my friends, meeting my extended family and my mom. And then at the same time, in a way, starting my grief journey, because I think, and, a lot of us can, who have been through losing a parent with a chronic illness, especially cancer, we almost, in a way, pre-grieve, or our grieving starts before our loved one's actual passing, right? We're, and especially for someone who likes control, like myself, I very much aware, I wouldn't call myself a control freak. I don't believe in that label, but I do like to have as much control as I can. And that was another thing which really hurt, was the first thought I was, what could I have done to prevent this? I didn't do enough. I worked at a cancer center. I should have investigated more options. I should have been there physically to go with her to all the oncology appointments. I should have done more. So with that, over the next year, listened to her. I try to go more often as work would allow. And my colleagues at the time were very supportive, so I was very fortunate in that regard as well. I had been at my job at the cancer center for a while, and my colleagues and my boss knew about the situation and were very open to me, you know, needing to adjust my schedule as needed. But it was really hard for my mom, because she always tried to put on a brave face. So she was a person who, she would only complain if you knew it was really bad. If it got to the point where she was at her wit's end or just going through a very tough time. And it was really difficult to, you know, when she did go through those tough moments right after a round of chemotherapy. I remember I didn't hear from her for a whole day. And of course, I immediately went into panic mode. And it was at the time Thanksgiving here in the US. And I was with my dad's side of the family, just constantly checking my phone. I was following up with her best friends. I was trying to call my grandma, just making sure that she's okay. And she was just sleeping it off, but I just was always so worried. And not being physically there throughout the whole journey, in a way, I think maybe protected me at the time from seeing some of those things. But on the other hand, just, and this is something that I've dealt with a lot since her passing, but it just established this tremendous amount of guilt because I associated with me being physically absent with, and I know this isn't true, but not being a good daughter or not being a good support system. And that's something that my mother never even alluded to. She never, ever made me feel that way. But just coming from a place of what could I have done and a place of wanting to control the situation, which we all know there's only so much we can do. But of course, that's not the rational mind speaking. So within that next year, again, going back to kind of the duality of how happy things can coexist with sad events, my now husband proposed to me and we were working on potentially setting a wedding date. And I remember this very distinctly. I thought, well, I would like for it to be a few years out. I was in grad school at the time. I wanted time to plan and I'd have to figure out the logistics with our family here in the US. My husband's American, getting everybody there, how my mom would travel here, you know, just kind of going right into all of that. However, and I'm very glad I did this. I remember I talked to my dad and my husband, and I was in kind of denial at the time. I think I was just more thinking like, my mom will make it. She'll make it another 2 years. So that's fine. We'll plan for then. At the time it was 2020, which ironically was the year that everything shut down. So, and I remember my husband and my dad having a grounding, loving conversation with me and telling me that it may be best to consider moving it up because we just don't know what my mom's treatment trajectory will look like. So I think that was an eye-opening thing for me. And then I ran it by my mom and she said the same thing. And she talked to her oncologist. And so we moved it up to 2019. So that was the same year that I lost my mom, was also the year that we got married. And I'm so glad we did because we planned the wedding and it happened in Greece and my mom was a very big part of it. And she took so much joy in helping plan it and just going through all the things that I know so many women unfortunately don't have a chance to do. And it's heartbreaking. And again, I realize I come from a place of privilege to have been able to experience that with my mom. It was wonderful. We had the wedding in the summer of 2019. My grandparents from the US came and my grandfather at the time, he was a retired judge. He officiated our wedding, which was always on my kind of bucket list or wish list, if you will. It meant so much. And because my mother and my father had such an amicable divorce and a healthy relationship, my mother remained very close with her former in-laws. So she was really close with my dad's father and mother, kind of like other, you know, another set of parents for her. So it was just so nice to see everybody together. And my dad was there. Some of our friends from the US were there. And it was just so wonderful. And it was, in hindsight, we call it kind of the last hurrah, like before everything completely 180'd and turned south from there. But we were very grateful to have been able to experience that. And throughout all of that, of course, my mom was dealing with chemotherapy. She had tried other alternative therapies, trials. We were looking at everything and anything. And she continued to put her brave face on and once again, never stopped making me feel like I was always a priority for her. Like her, how much love she had for me was just so, gosh, it's overwhelming just to think about. I mean, my heart swells just thinking about how much my mom did for me, even in her final months. And it's really incredible. But after the wedding, her health declined fairly quickly. And so I remember distinctly in November, so a couple of months after our wedding, she was just feeling worse and worse. It was getting harder for her to even get up and move around the house to just make herself a cup of coffee or some food. And so she was heavily relying at that point on my grandmother, who lived in the same building. Her friends, her best friends, were her rock. And again, me not being physically there was a very difficult thing to process. And in November, I knew she was waiting to have one of her appointments with her oncologist at the time, when they were exploring different avenues and different ways of, you know, seeing what other treatments could work for her. So I know that she had a follow-up scheduled. The next day, I didn't really hear from her. So I thought, okay, she's busy. And then we had our scheduled call. We would talk many times when I would drive to work because of the time difference. So it was morning my time, kind of early afternoon her time. And that was part of kind of our little routine. And it's like so many other listeners, I'm sure, and guests on the podcast have said, there is just those moments that are so engraved and permanently just living in our mind. Of when we get the news, right? Whether it's that we received the call that they passed, or the news that there's nothing else they can do, you know, it's just those permanently imprinted memories. And I remember, of all places, I had just gotten my coffee from this particular Starbucks near my neighborhood, which I have not gone to since that day. And she said, "Unfortunately, honey, I talked to the oncologist. There's nothing else they can do." And my first thought is, well, there has to be something else, right? And I'm processing all these things in my head, but I was at a loss for words. And I don't even remember exactly what I said back, but my mother's response was, "It's going to be okay." And that's when she mentioned the quote, I'm quoting what I said earlier, of, it doesn't matter how big the circle of your life is, as long as that circle is full of love and memories, and it's what you make of it. And I remember even then I was just in awe. I broke out into tears because I just didn't know what other reaction was appropriate. I kept telling her how much I love her and how I'll be there for her. And I just remember, after we went through kind of all the cycles of the emotions together, at the end of our call, we even made it like a little fun thing. She's like, "You know, and then I'll come back and I will haunt people that you want me to." Like, she even found humor in this, which was just amazing. And I remember pulling into work just completely disoriented, trying to figure out the logistics. And I remember having my husband and my dad help me just kind of, I remember buying that one-way ticket, going to Greece, telling work that I'm just going on leave indefinitely, not knowing when I'm coming back. And I said, I'll be there as long as I have to. And I was, I stayed with her at the hospital when she was no longer able to get up. I remember when I got there, as soon as I could, after we found out the news within that same week, I remember just how quickly, from the summer, just a couple of months ago, from seeing her to now, how much it had changed. And seeing your parent be that way, right? We always think of our parents as superheroes and champions, and there comes a time when the roles reverse and we have to be there for our parents, if our relationship, you know, is that way. That's not for everyone, but for a lot of us. And I remember calling the ambulance and just trying to figure out what to do, because she just at one point was very hard for her to even wake up. So we get to the hospital, and I think we were at the hospital for about 2 weeks. And in Greece, I should say, there's no kind of established hospice and palliative care system like we have here in the US. So I had a kind of makeshift a type of hospice environment for her because I knew she wouldn't want to spend her last days in the hospital. And it was very kind of mentally and exhausting, I think, I mean, for me, but for her, I just think it'd be, I thought at the time, like she needs to be at home because there's nothing much else that could do besides pain management after a while. But oh gosh, just being at the hospital and seeing how quickly she declined. One of the things that was really a profound moment when I realized, oh my gosh, I'm losing my mom, was when I think the term is encephalopathy, when it, you know, the disease progressed so much that it went to her brain. And it's almost like you're dealing with someone who has a form of dementia. And, you know, there were moments when she didn't know who I was, or she would think she's on a mountain somewhere, or she would just wake up screaming in pain in the middle of the night. And it was really hard. I remember reading articles and talking to even the oncologist, who was very sweet at the time, to say that their hearing is the last thing to go. So play music and talk to your mom just like you would, because even if she's not responding, she's listening. And I took that with me. And ultimately, after being at the hospital for a long time, we brought her home. I found a few wonderful nurses, some who came during the day to help, and then some who stayed overnight, which was so helpful for me. I am not a type of person who asks for help, but I was taking all the help I could get. My best friends were there to show up for me, my mom's best friends. My dad flew over from the US and saw my mom and even stayed at the hospital with me and back home. And then finally, my husband came. And she kept getting progressively worse at home, even for a few days. And I remember my mom passed away on December 7th. December 6th is the day my husband arrived. And at that point, my mom, the doctors kind of described it basically almost in the comatose state. Like the responses were very minimal. And we weren't sure, because it's very variable, how long that can last. And I think for those who have been in a similar situation, it's a very hard thing because we want our loved ones to be around as long as possible, but at the same time, we don't want them to be miserable. So it's that very conflicting thought process of, I want to hang on to my mom as much as I can, but at the same time, I don't want this for her to continue for another month or two or three or however long this can go on. So that was very difficult to process. And I thought, okay, well, we'll just make the best of it and see how she does. And I'll just make her as comfortable as I possibly can. And my husband arrived on the 6th, so that Friday before she passed. That Saturday, the day of her passing, I remember my father and my husband were in another room drinking coffee, and I went into the room where my mother was. She was in her bed. I laid beside her and I talked to her and I reassured her that I was going to be okay and that she was so brave. And I held her hand like I always did. And I told her that if she's tired, she doesn't have to continue fighting. And I want her to be free. And I want her to find peace. And that If she's ready to go, I'm ready to let her go. And then I spent some time with her. I kept playing her favorite music. And then about, I don't even remember, an hour or two later, I get up, I go to the kitchen, and we were kind of on rotation with somebody always being in the room with her, and my husband and my dad and a couple of mom's close friends were there in the room with her. And my husband comes out and says, "I think your mom has stopped breathing. We should probably call the doctor." And she passed. I called 911, I think, or the equivalent of 911 there. And I remember still at that point when they were on their way and my husband telling me that, I ran into her room and I thought, there's more that I can do. I tried. I told my mom. I remember thinking that I should give her CPR. I remember just standing there with her on the bed, holding her hand, just being absolutely inconsolable. Like, it's just something that was so hard. But I saw her actually, you know, take her last breath. And I know for those that were there to experience the actual passing of their loved ones, it's a very hard thing to do. And yeah, the rest of that day was a blur. But that was just something that's stuck with me. I've been able to process it a lot since her passing, but even though earlier that day I was willing to let it go up until the last minute, I still could not come to terms with the fact that I was losing my mom. And after that, I mean, you know, comes with all of the stuff that we have to somehow power through, right? With the funeral arrangements and her belongings and everything. And that was a journey in of itself. But the thing that my first thought was, what am I going to do without my mom? You know, my mom was my compass. My mom was my rock. My mom and I, also, I should have mentioned this earlier on, we had a daily gratitude practice. So we would kind of text each other what we were grateful for every day. And we wrote each other a lot, even though we talked on the phone too. So I kind of went back and compiled all of that so I would never lose it and always kind of keep that with me. And I was just so inconsolable. And I remember that all I wanted, and sometimes to this day, right, was just to be held. And I remember that day, and I'm a person that's very private. I try not to cry a lot in front of others or, you know, show emotion. I just remember running out and just, you know, going into my father's arms and just crying and crying and crying. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I lost her. And this is a piece of advice that my father told me, not that same day, but later on, after her funeral, and once we'd had some time to digest everything, he said that a great way for me to be able to kind of express how I'm feeling and stay connected with my mom was to write to her. And that was, I think, the single best piece of advice that I've had that I really kept. And since then, it has been a part of my healing process where every month I write my mom a letter. And I've done that every month since she passed. So it kind of happened organically. In January, after I had come back to the US, I remember there was one day where I was alone and I was just sitting there with my thoughts, right? And it's just kind of the same as when we journal, we like to kind of put pen to paper and kind of get it out, right? In one way or another. And I just wrote to her that I miss her and just all of the day-to-day that I missed about our talks. Like, we would talk about our shows and criticize the characters and talk about what we ate that day. And, you know, just the little things that I think we don't realize how much of a significance they have until we lose them. And so I just decided to write her a letter because I was just so inconsolable. And I cried and cried and cried, but I was able to let it out. And that helped me. As silly as it may sound to some, I think it's, you know, a lot of the listeners can probably resonate maybe with this in some way, is that sometimes you have to carve out that time to grieve. Because many of us know about the stages of grief. And they're not always linear, right? Like, they don't happen in a specific fashion. But sometimes I think one of the stages is denial or anger. And I think for me personally, it's really important to recognize, okay, when I'm feeling this way, what's the root cause? And sometimes I will specifically look at a picture of my mother, open up a photo album, or read a letter she wrote to me once to get in that place to really sit with my grief, which may sound masochistic, if you will, to some, but it's about confronting it and being okay with it. There's a quote, I want to say, maybe it's Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, I don't remember, but I think the quote goes, if we choose to love, we must also have the courage to grieve. Because I think that grief, in a way, is all that love that has nowhere to go. And that has to be, you know, filtered out in some capacity. So, like I said earlier on, having this incredible platform to be able to share an unfiltered story from the heart is one way. Another way is having a community, right? So I think you've mentioned before in some of the episodes about grief share or maybe other grieving groups. Again, going back to the control, I remember right as I was coming back to the US after my mom had passed, I said, I need to find a grief group. I found a grief share locally here in Tampa. And it was a great way to feel like I'm part of a community that understood to a certain extent, you know, what I went through, were supportive. And quite frankly, another thing for me was having a group of people that could serve almost like a maternal figure for me. So my mom's friends, one, her best friend, I still talk to her to this day. We have regular calls and we kind of jokingly said, you're like a mom to me. And it's a way for us to kind of keep my mother's memory alive. My friends, I mean, my husband, my dad, it's made me find ways of really, in a way, I guess, even enhancing the relationships I currently have, because that's the support, that's the community. So all that being said, it's a very individual process. It's different for everyone, but that's something that's really, really, I think, been so helpful. And another thing that has been really helpful is for anyone who's kind of more of a visual learner like me, I also have been going to therapy for many years. So that's another great way to help with the healing journey. I started seeing my therapist actually right when my mom got that diagnosis of the metastatic cancer. And my therapist gave me this kind of visual of how grief works. And because a lot of people say that it gets better over time, well, it's a yes and a no. So if we think of our grief as kind of this circle in a larger box, at the beginning, the circle is pretty large. So the outer edges of the circle touch upon all of the different areas of the box. So over time, that circle may get smaller and smaller and smaller. But as it moves around within that box or square, when it hits the edges of where it did before, the pain is still the same. And that is so true, because when the loss is very raw and new, every day feels like a struggle, right? I remember going to the grocery store and, you know, someone was a little rude and I thought, gosh, why? I mean, I just lost my mom. Like, where's the sympathy? And, you know, I would see, and to this day, I must admit, I have a little bit of a struggle with this, like seeing a mother and a daughter and just feeling absolutely gutted because I know I'm never going to have that again, you know, like a mother and a daughter on a lunch date or doing something together. For me, also where I'm at in my life, I am very aware that when the time comes and I have children of my own, my mom won't be there. And I know she would have been the best grandma and I won't get to share that with her. And there was this article that I read when I knew in my mom's final days that I think a friend had shared with me. It's by an author called John Pavlovitz, I think, about how everyone around you is grieving in some way or another. So to be kind. And I call this jokingly with my friends and family, the tip of the iceberg theory. So what that means is what we see around us is only a small percentage of what's really going on. We don't know what's below the surface. And I remember jokingly telling my therapist right after my mom passed, I should get a shirt that says, "My mom just died. Please be nice to me." I did not do that. That would have been interesting if I had. But it's something that I try to live with that every day, whether it's at work, in my day-to-day interactions. I never know what someone else is going through, and I want to be sensitive to that, just like I wish, you know, people were sensitive to me when I was going through all of that. And so I think being kind has that effect where ultimately we get kindness back, and that's been very helpful. And it's been a way to honor my mom. I wrote her a letter in her final days, and I told her that I promise her that in my day-to-day actions, I will always try to exemplify the way she lived and be kind and brave, find the funny and the silver linings in things as they come along, as she always did, and sometimes make dark jokes, but that's okay to lighten up the mood, because we need that. But yeah, it's, I'm not saying it doesn't get easier, it does, but also on the moments, whether it's triggered by a specific thing, like an anniversary or just a random moment, it's also super okay to not be okay. And that's taken a lot of work to come to the terms with the fact that it's okay to be sad. It's okay to go through the feelings, because as mentioned on previous episodes, I think as a culture, we're very, I think the term is kind of emotionally illiterate. We don't know how to deal with these tough, heavy situations. And oftentimes, you know, like I'm coming to you and the podcast with everything that I have to say, but that's not always easy for someone to hear that hasn't gone through a similar situation. And we're not really hardwired as a society to have kind of a go-to book, right? Like we search on the internet what to write in a wedding card or congrats on a baby shower. We don't really have that type of protocol for how to be there for our loved ones who may be grieving or what to say. And I must admit that when there have been friends and family of mine that have lost their loved ones, I sometimes am at a loss for what to say because everyone's so different and it's an individual process. And so I try to be sensitive to that. Another kind of a final thing too, for me personally on my grieving journey, is that shortly after losing my mom, 6 months later, I lost my grandpa, who was my wedding officiant and was someone that I was very close and dear to. 6 months after that, we lost my father-in-law. And so it was kind of a grief overload year for me. And I think really kind of made me dive right into how I can deal with this, with so much loss for someone who, you know, had not even turned 30. But I came out, you know, the other end, I would say stronger mentally, for sure. It also coincided with the year that we had the pandemic. So for me, in a way, it kind of worked because it hit the pause button in my life. And I was home more and able to sit with my thoughts more and do a lot of the healing that I intended to. And then the other thing more recently for me last year, as I mentioned, my mom was from Greece and I had family there, amongst others being my wonderful grandmother, who I was very close to, and she passed away last year. And then 2 months later, my mom's only other sibling, my uncle, passed away. So as of last year, I also have no other immediate family back home. So that's been another very kind of, you know, big loss for me. So the loss of my mother, of course, is the, you know, the hardest thing that I will ever have to go through. I know that if I, you know, went through that, I can do anything. And I live by that every day. But it's been so hard for me to know that when I go home, I don't have anyone now to greet me there. And I also don't have anyone who is an immediate family member of my mom to commemorate her. And that's really hard. I think when we lose someone, many times that person, you know, that loss is significant to others around us. So if we have siblings, we lose a parent, you know, the sibling can resonate. But it was hard because now I feel like it's all on me to uphold my family's memories. My mom, I found myself the other day wanting to try to call my grandmother just to talk about mom, and I realized I don't even have that anymore. So it's been something that I've been processing more over the last year. But like I said earlier, I try to take it that I went through the loss of my mom. I can do anything and just take it day by day. And on the days that are not okay, I will sit with that and I won't try to suppress it. Because I've noticed that when I try to kind of push it away, just like everything else, it comes back in a bigger, more explosive way. So many times, as you know firsthand, we don't even want to go to that uncomfortable place. But sometimes we have to in order to kind of face it. And I don't want to say deal with it. It's not something we can deal with and move on, but process and ultimately work on healing and living with it. I think grief is like, I'm using that analogy from Inside Out because I loved it so much in one of the previous episodes, is that we have these different, you know, characters. So we live with our little grief that we can, you know, name them and characterize them. And, you know, we're just aware that it's there. And it's just part of who we are now, and we work with it. So I think, yeah, that's really most of everything I had to share. And I hope someone who either lost their mom, either an only child, I know, you know, we've had similar cases I've learned from other episodes. And it was so nice to kind of feel, I don't want to say validated, but not alone. Because it's just such a, you know, different experience for everyone. But, you know, if someone's an only child, they're really close to their mom, or even, you know, if their mom lived far away, hopefully something that I share today will resonate with another listener. And yeah, we're not alone.
You're right. We're not. There's a whole community of us here. Well, since it seems like you like to read, when you were talking about the, you know, finding the root cause of your feelings and not stuffing it down, there's a book called Emotional Agility, which is the opposite of what you were saying about emotional. You said we don't have emotional intelligence. You called it emotional. I forget what you called
it. I think I'm emotionally illiterate.
Thank like, you. Yes. So this book, Emotional Agility, has a lot of really great, you know, when you read it, it's kind of like it's common sense, but just because it seems like it's common sense doesn't mean we do it or we practice it. But it is so true that you have to allow yourself to feel the feelings as hard as they are, because when you stuff them down, they're going to come out eventually. And it's, you know, going to be usually tenfold or more when you hold, depending on how long you hold it in. So just wanted to give you the name of that book. And one of the things that she says in the book, you talked about kind of naming your feelings. And she would always say, instead of saying, I'm sad, say, I feel sad. So like, you're not personifying the emotion, you're experiencing it, but you are not, you know, I am not sad, I'm feeling sad, which in just changing, you know, your dialect, your monologue that you have with yourself, it can make a big difference over time, but it takes practice.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That is so true. So true.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when you talked about, you told her that if you're ready to go, I'm okay. And then changed your mind. And at the last minute thought, you know, what can I do to keep her here? It doesn't matter how long we know or the diagnosis has been. Like my niece and I talked about this with my sister. Like, we still didn't think she was going to die. She was on hospice and she was having difficulty breathing, but yeah, I just don't think your brain can allow you to go there prematurely.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Beth. And I think one thing that, because I, like you mentioned with your niece, you know, thinking like when we know our loved one is in hospice or in their final stages, I think that's the anticipatory grief of, it can be the denial stage. Like we're just, our mind does just not go there. And that's a way I think that our minds are protecting us, or, you know, maybe they're hardwired to do that because we're like, okay, well, they're still physically here. So the rational part of our brain is saying, well, this is not happening yet. So up until the very last moment, we're just trying to maximize that and prolong it. So kind of that denial is there to protect us, in quotes. And I don't know if that's healthy or not, but I think that's just such a common experience. Like you went through it yourself. And I think everyone else that listens to this podcast and was in a similar situation with the anticipatory grief that you described, that's what it comes down to. I think it's just a very common thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like you were saying that you wanted to keep your mom there as long as you could, but you also didn't want her to be existing in the way that she was at that time. It's just, yeah, it's just such a rock and a hard place that you're in between. It's definitely, yeah, one of those Disney movie experiences. I love that you brought that up, because I'm like, okay, Finding Nemo, like his mom dies in like the first 2 minutes of the movie.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
It's always that.
I know. We should have a running joke going like, okay, what minute time point did the mother or parent, usually the mother, pass away? It's like, oh, we made it to 10 minutes. That's a first. So yeah, it's usually right off the bat.
But isn't it ironic that we, you know, kind of talk about having the Disney fairy tale life with, like, you know, Cinderella with the white horse and all that, but the other side of the Disney movie is that there's always a parent
always
going to be gone. Always.
Always.
Always. Yeah.
Then Prince Charming comes in, so everything's fine, right?
Right. Yep. Well, the last thing I wanted to tell you, because this your podcast will release in April, is that I'm doing a co-project with Kara Sanchez, who wrote actually a book called Legacy Letters, so that you can actually leave messages to your loved ones, but you do it while you're, you know, still alive. And she started a Get Griefy magazine. But we are going to do a Mother's Day, write a letter to your mom for Mother's Day.
Oh,
yeah. And she's helping me with it, because I told you before that I'm not necessarily the techno person. But I think it's going to be kind of like a bulletin board kind of place where you can go and you can read other people's, you know, things. Because somebody that was on the podcast recently shared about how her mom died when she was very young, and she just wished at some point in time somebody had said, just write it to your mom. So we're going to do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I hope you participate in that and can join us in writing a letter to your mom.
Yeah, thank you. I definitely will. Any way, and I know a lot of other listeners have mentioned this too, like little kind of rituals to incorporate on those significant days, like Mother's Day, birthdays. I would definitely be interested in that. And I think it's such a great resource because not everyone, especially if they lost their mother at a young age, had the ability to do so. So it's still, I think, such a great way to express that and share it with the world. So thank you.
Yeah. So look, stay tuned for that. Or by the time this releases, it'll be out there. So if you're listening to this in April, check to see on my Instagram and there'll be some information there about writing a letter to your mom for Mother's Day. So Melissa, I usually finish the podcast with if there's a final thought or something you want to share with the listeners. And if not, I didn't work this out ahead of time, so it's totally up to you.
No, thank you, Beth. I think that the takeaway is that there is no right way to grieve, and that whatever feelings, thoughts, whether you're someone who has repressed your grief or someone who is sad a lot or whatever it may be, that it's okay. And that everyone has their own healing and grieving journey. And my biggest suggestion or advice would be to find a way to establish a community and support system. And hence why maybe they're listening to this podcast. So that's step number one. So if anyone's listening, you're already there. And and also the place of vulnerability, knowing that it's okay to be vulnerable, and that alone is very healing in and of itself. So those were kind of my closing thoughts.
Like I always say, I don't like that you're a part of the club, but I appreciate your willingness to share your story with us.
Thank you, Beth.
If you'd like more information on my thoughts about the grief journey, please visit my website, www.yourgriefjourney.com. If you'd be interested in sharing your story on the podcast, please send me an email to daughterswithoutmoms@gmail.com.